Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is February the 27th, 2014. So, yeah, so glad to have you all on the call. I think we had, last time we had a record high number of people, I think 11 or 12 people on the call, which was fantastic. And so people will be joining us here, too. So it's great as we've, come to a close with the Olympics, we can talk a little bit more about stories there, about difficult athletes to work with, and also Gio has a couple of case studies that he forwarded to me, questions, and so I thought that would be good to have that as a something that we could talk about that applied to everyone here. And if any of others of you have case studies or clients that you're working with that you have questions about, you can always forward me their or a little bit of information and questions, and then we can answer those on these calls, too, to help you, you know, serve your clients better. And most of the time, regardless of what sport it is, the same principles apply to every sport, so we can all benefit from that. So, did someone else just join us, too?
Hi, Joanne. It's Amy.
Oh, hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Okay, great.
Good.
Yeah, glad to have you on the call, too. Yeah, was there anyone else? When you join, you can always just say your name and all as you're coming on the call. So, yeah, so that's great. So, also I wanted to, in our next call after this, these calls, of course, are always second and fourth Thursday of the month at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 Eastern time. And so our next call after
this. Sorry, guys, I cut off.
Oh, okay. Glad you're back. And so our next call after this one would be March the 13th. If you can put that on your calendar, March 13th, and then March the 27th. So, so today we were going to talk about working with difficult clients and athlete mistakes. And Gio, I'm so glad that you've got some questions. Also, there was a question that came in by just a short question by Michelle, who just asked Dr. Joanne, I'll have to miss tonight's call because there's a cold, but she had a question. She said, I'm just finishing up my website, and I'm wondering if I can use the word sport psychology program. Since I'm not a sports psychologist, I'm not sure if this is permitted. So, and the answer to that is, and for all of you, is, you can certainly use those kinds of words. Yeah, it's just you could use sports psychology expert, sports psychology consultant, sports psychology coach. You'd need to be a sports psychologist, an actual clinical licensed clinical psychologist to call yourself sports psychologist, according to the rules that I've read and standards of the industry. So. So that's just a little clarification there. You could also, say you're certified as a performing edge coaching professional. You're welcome to do that. I wanted to answer, I just wanted to make an announcement that we're going to start a level 2 course tomorrow, and I'll send you out more information later today about that, and it'll be a lot of you have requested that, to be able to do more continued training, and so it'll be an eight module course, just like the first one, and you'll get a discounted fee for that if you would like to take it. It's optional, not mandatory, but it's a lot of people were wanting that, just to go into more coaching and business. So each module will have a coaching track and a business marketing track with specialized, highly effective marketing methods for our for you as performing edge coaches. And I'll teach you more advanced coaching techniques so we can go into greater depth and how you can, use the best either free or low-cost methods to quickly build your profitable business. And it'll include things like, more coach training and case studies, speaker training, how to make income from many different methods, speaking, from writing a book, your website strategies, how to build your website, and, you know, I can critique your websites on the calls, that sort of thing, and social media training, how to use all the different tools, Facebook, YouTube, Google+, LinkedIn, video marketing, and we'll talk about, you know, e-commerce, so your website can do the marketing for you, bring in the income for you so you don't have to do as much work. And we'll talk about press releases and, you know, how to get your website to the top of the rankings, all of those sorts of topics. So, so if you're, I'll send you out more information later today if you're interested in that. And then you've got, and then next week you've got a few days to decide on that. And it's open, down the road, just like the other course. You can start at any time as well. If you're doing just the first level, then, you can go ahead and, I know some of you are new, so you could just do that and then take this level two, when you're finished with that. So, just wanted to tell you about that, and I'm real excited to be able to, give you more information. And I'll also be adding more, updating the level one, so I'm putting more information in there too for all of us so that you've got latest information on coaching and marketing there too. So why don't we dive into there are questions for today. I know Gio, you sent me a couple of case studies, which is great, and so do you want to talk about and then we can all kind of dive into and just mention what kinds of things would be helpful. And
For sure. I think it's firstly, guys, I've been lucky enough, I suppose, to through some friends and contacts of mine, got the opportunity for them to, I suppose, be my guinea pig in terms of trying out some new methods and mental training on them. So I'll give you a bit of a background on what sports they're in and what level of those sports they're at. And then obviously from that, I had certain questions and concerns, not concerns, questions really, of how I've handled them and what type of things that I could do with them. Shall I just go case by case, Doctor? Shall I just...
Yeah, so just, I guess it was Sam first?
Yeah. First guy just had his first professional MMA fight.
And MMA stands for?
Mixed martial arts.
Mixed martial arts. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would. Yeah. Does everybody know what mixed martial arts is?
I don't. But.
Okay. You've seen the guys on the cage, the UFC fighters.
Oh, that one. Okay.
Those crazy guys. So you probably know they need some sort of mindset to get in there.
Martial arts.
Yeah. It's a mixture. It's basically a mixture of kickboxing, boxing, jiu-jitsu. Pretty much everything goes. The UFC is the big brand in the States that run the mixed martial arts, I suppose.
It's a very kind sport.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, very kind and loving sport. it's definitely a serious sport. It really is. And then the mental side of it can separate somebody from actually training hard and getting in the ring or never getting in the ring. Doing it to keep fit, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, and what's the other one you mentioned?
Yeah, it's boxing, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, all different forms of, fighting, basically. It's a mixture of it all. There's no really set discipline, but the main disciplines that these guys do are, they come from a jiu-jitsu and wrestling background.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of ex-Olympic wrestlers or state champions, and these guys develop, and they sort of can tend to turn into MMA fighters. Boxers, you don't see many boxers that go into MMA. It tends to happen the other way. But people come from the boxing background, I suppose. And kickboxing and jiu-jitsu, these are the main, I suppose, four disciplines that would make up mixed martial arts. But it's all done in one fight, one scenario, one ring, or cage, as they call it.
Right, so anything goes kind of thing? Or
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so you want to tell us about Sam, the first guy?
Yeah, Sam has just recently completed his first professional fight. He won his fight. He's the type of guy that if you meet him and see him from the outside, you know, and I haven't had a lot of chance to sit and speak to him and really delve into his mental state, but he seems very strong-minded and confident, and his work ethic is fantastic. I mean, he trained extremely hard, you know. So I suppose, firstly, my questions would be on this guy, how would you approach it? Would you delve in and start to assess him and find out where the fear, if there's any fears, you know? I don't really know. How would you conduct an assessment on a guy like that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Gio. And one thing you mentioned in your note that you sent me was that although he seems confident, maybe when he faces a guy who has a good fight record or a better fight record and a certain reputation, there may be some concerns and doubts that arise prior to the fight. And so that's a really good point, and I think that you can assume that with all fighters or most everyone that just in general with every sport, with tennis or golf, whatever it is, when you know that's a major fear that you can assume that athletes have when you come up against someone that you think is better than you. You think, oh my, so and so arrived, you know, or oh, I have to fight so and so.
Well, I think the important thing to note is the dynamics change. He comes from, I suppose, being one of the better guys in the amateur scene. All of a sudden, he's now at the bottom of the pile because he's the new pro. So there's a massive shift in dynamic there. So I could foresee at some point him going in there with guys that have already been in through that mental growth and that experience. And, you know, they're six, seven, eight fights in and their mindset's very different, you know, so...
Yeah,
I think there's something that I could see happening potentially.
Right. So that you know, he might not be the top dog right now, but he can work his way up.
Yeah. But would you? I would think that you would want to address the situation of what could potentially happen when that comes, rather than let it happen, him have a failure and then address it. What would you say would be the best way to attack that?
Yeah.
Preempt it.
Oh, sorry. I think that. Yeah, it's, you know, just some of the questions that you could ask him first, you know, for an assessment would be, what are your goals as a, you know, pro MMA fighter? What gets in the way? What obstacles or barriers do you face, you know, to doing your best? And, what fears, you know, or fears or anxieties? And just, you know, it's good when you say that to normalize it and say, I know every athlete has these fears and has nervousness. Or you could say it as, you know, nervousness is kind of a gentler word to use for athletes that doesn't imply some kind of mental illness. Just say that everyone has that. And what level of nervousness would you say you have? And in general, with assessments, too, with talking with the athlete, it's, you know, it's good to ask open-ended questions as opposed to yes-no questions, of course. So you wouldn't want to say, are you nervous? Do you get nervous? Because then they, you know, just get a yes or no. But just say, you know, what level of nervousness do you have? Or how do you know, if you have some nervousness, how do you notice that? Or who do you get nervous with the most? Is a good question. You know, which kinds of athletes? It might be a certain athletes that, you know, certain names that he gets worried about, or certain styles of kicking,
yeah,
fighting. Or somebody that has a big bad reputation of being really a good fighter. Or who do you get intimidated by, kind of thing. And then you could say, ask him to take me through one of your best fights. So you can start with if he's already starting with talking about something that's not working, then that's okay. Start with that. But you could say, take me through one of your best fights. You know, what did that look like? How did you perform? How'd you feel? And then take me through one of your worst fights. You know, where you just had the most difficulty, and you have him describe that. And then you could say, and ask him about his thoughts. What kind of negative thoughts do you have, or self-doubts before a fight? And just to mention that, you know, everybody has those. It's very normal and something that we all have to work with. So you kind of normalize that as well. And then, get into more specifics. What happens when you fight a guy that has a better fight record than you, or that you feel a little intimidated by? And he could talk about that. And then, ask him to take you through that. You know, what does happen now, and then what would you like to have happen? So you can, kind of imagine all the different scenarios, because there's millions of scenarios that could happen, right? Think of all the different things that, different positions he could be in. And, you know, when you're, when you're behind, or when you're, or when the score is close, or when you're feeling tired, what happens then? And see if you can come up with a plan for each one of those. Let's imagine the different, tough scenarios, all the things that could go wrong, and come up with a plan for each one. So that's another thing you could do. And then you could ask him, have you beaten someone that's better than you? You know, sometimes athletes, they surprise themselves and they didn't think they could beat somebody, but they actually did. And, if you can have them tell you that story, that's a great story to start with. Say, okay, tell me about that. Paint me a picture of that. How did you do it? And what did it feel like to win? And how did you get through it, when you thought maybe you were losing? So, kind of have them take you through that kind of scenario. And then you could ask, tell me about a peak performance. You then go through the, in module, if you go through the modules in the level one, there's a pre-assessment, pre-visualization assessment. So you could go through that with him and ask, tell me about a peak performance, a time when you felt your absolute best with. And it could be in fighting, or if for some reason he hasn't had any good experiences with fighting, then have him tell you about a peak experience in something else, another sport, or just when he was confident in a conversation, or when he met his first love, or just something where he felt really good. Just say, paint a picture for me and bring in all the five senses. And, just go through that assessment, a pre-visualization assessment, so you can build all the information to take him through a visualization of what you'd like to happen. And then you could go through the different, go through first the peak performance, I think, a time when he felt really good, and say, tell me about all the times that, or, go through that particular fight, basically you're reading back to him the information he gave you about the good that good situation. And then you could do other visualizations as you progress along with different sessions, do one on the different scenarios. Okay, let's say you're behind now, and the guy's really beating you up. How do you handle that? And let's see, now let's do another scenario, do another visualization when the score is close. You're really, it's really close to the end, and every move counts. Let's imagine that, when you tend to maybe tighten up or the pressure's really on. And let's imagine now in maybe another scenario where you feel tired, but you get a second wind and get a some renewed energy. Where can that energy come from? So have them visualize all those different things. And so those are some ideas. And I wrote down those ideas here, and what I'll do is just create a Word document here, a PDF, and then just put it in the website right underneath our recording for this call. I'll put my notes, so that everyone can have this too. If that's okay, is that okay with you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was scribbling up mad trying to keep up there. That's refreshing to hear that, yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. So everyone can benefit. And then you asked what areas could we help him improve, right?
I think what you've covered there is a great way of sort of getting, an honest conversation going, and you're creating a good, a good environment to find out what's happening and learn from, aren't you? So after that, my next thing would be, okay, so what do we do now then?
Yeah, what do we do now? Well, I'd say, you know, helping him handle the pressure, doing the mental preparation for his next competition, you know, asking him, okay, what's coming up for you? What, do you have a fight coming up, and when is it? And set, you know, set the scene for that. And then say, okay, let's imagine this next, you know, fight coming up. If he knows who he's going to be fighting, you know, have him describe that guy or this different. Did they do just one fight or a series of fights?
No, it'd be one fight in an evening.
Okay.
So, yeah, it'd be one fight, then maybe a couple of weeks later or a month, depends. But
how long does the fight last?
It's five rounds normally, or 3 to 5 rounds, depending. 5-minute rounds each. So these things can, you know, be over in 20 seconds, or they can go the full distance, you know.
Right, yeah, exactly. So so you could have him describe to you the who he'd be playing, if he knows the, would he know ahead of time who he's fighting?
Yeah, he'd know, and you know, he'd get information on the guy as much as possible. So there'd be a reputation, there'd be a somewhat of a story behind it, and these can be good and bad. The, you know, knowing this information, I think good for the coach.
Yeah.
Sometimes bad for the fighter.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times, you know, we tend to. Yeah, whenever whoever the competition is, you know, you tend to put them way up on a pedestal and think, oh, geez, well, you know, I'm just going to try to survive this, or if I'm fighting so-and-so, I might as well take second place. And they already put themselves in a pecking order and kind of build up the results, assume that this is what the results are going to be, whereas if you can have them see that other person as just an equal or just another human being. Marty Licouri, he was the number one miler in the world many years ago, and I interviewed him. He actually was on Wide World of Sports, ABC Wide World of Sports, when I did the Hawaii Ironman triathlon and got second, and he was commentating for that, so I got to interview him, and he said when I think it was Jim Ryan was his competition, and he always used to see him as a formidable, you know, opponent, but then he just started to see him as a regular person that you know, he would imagine him putting on his pants, say, oh yeah, he puts on his pants one leg at a time just like I do, you know, just a regular guy, and not try to take away, see them as just a, or see them as a, even, you know, kind of some way that you can laugh at the whole situation, then it takes the power out of what they're doing, so he can just feel free to compete, and then work on getting rid of negative thoughts, and just being able to improving his confidence and making the MP3 visualizations for him, do some problem solving with each situation, I'd say. Each after the fight, you know, talk about what happened and where he got hung up, and what he'd like to do differently. And since you're, I mean, do you do coaching yourself?
I do the boxing side of it. So
what's
that? I do the boxing coaching.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're familiar with that, then you know you can, you know, coach him on the technique, physical technique as well as mental technique. There. Yeah, do other, so let's just ask other people, Greg and Amy and Alex, do you have comments on that or things you'd suggest for Gio?
No, I think you're right on. I don't know how much I can add to that, but yeah. I guess my stance is when you're saying to pay more attention to any negative thoughts, that the athlete may be saying to herself during the event. I think it's an issue that goes beyond the performance itself. That may have to do with the personal character of that individual. Because it's not just the athletic event. I think if we can help the athlete be more aware of negative thoughts, even outside the athletic performance, it may be easier then to use it when they are performing a sport. Because it's not. I think that the individual is pretty much the same person in when they're practicing sport and outside. It's the same person. It's not that much of a difference. So I try to help them is, if you get, it's great to practice and to be aware when negative thoughts are coming up for you when you play sports. But equally important is when you're outside the sport, because if you can start practicing those, that switch from negative to positive, even outside the sport, they'd be much easier to apply the same technique when you're playing sport. So that's what I'm trying share with the athletes.
That's great.
So they become the same person. I'm not trying to develop this human person that is very good when he's on the tennis court, but outside is a different, completely different person. I mean, there are people like that. I'm not saying they aren't. But I think
I understand. You're saying it's an expression of who they really are. When they're performing, it's more of an expression of who they truly are.
Yeah, that's what I think so. I mean, that's what I. But I think when they hear that it's not just a sport that you're practicing, and they got negative thoughts about it. But I'm wondering if outside the sport, does it happen to you that when you're struggling with something, it may have to do because you have negative thoughts, and that may be very well the case. So if they become more mindful of that, that sometimes they apply negative thoughts when they are driving or when they are, meeting somebody else, or they have other challenges. If they can start applying the switch from negative to positive outside the sports event, then it's like the beginning to train themselves that I can make this switch kind of all the time, not just while I'm practicing sport, but also outside the sport.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't know if it makes any sense.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Alex. Thank you. Yeah, that's great. Anyone else, Amy or Greg, have ideas? Or other athletes that you've worked with a similar issue?
I think both of you are right on, Alex. I think that point
that's Greg,
is huge.
Right?
Yeah, this is Greg, sorry. But, I think that your point is huge in regard to, we're not athletes, and then when we're not performing, we turn into like Jekyll and Hyde. You know, we're not two different people. We're the same person. So if you can integrate your thinking or your thought patterns into, your daily life as well as your athletic life, I mean, making that bridge is just reinforces, what you're trying to accomplish. So, and as far as negative thoughts are concerned, this is something I'm going to work on with the soccer team in Colorado next week. It's a new team. They've got almost half of their players are brand new. So the real challenge that I see with most of the teams that I work with is the negative thinking, as Alex was talking about, and they end up getting into this blame, shame, and complain cycle. In other words, they create these excuses either for their own performance or project it out onto somebody else and blame them or complain about somebody else's performance, and it creates that negative thinking cycle. So, but we do that in our personal life as well. Doesn't relate just to athletics. So what I take them through is this little exercise to try and get them to stop blaming, shaming, and complaining, because those are nothing more than excuses. And an excuse only has two results, and neither one of them are very positive in respect to somebody. If you were to complain, let's say, about a call in a soccer game, maybe you got called for a penalty that you didn't believe you actually committed, so you start complaining either to the referee or maybe a teammate. So what you're looking to do is create some fellowship of the miserable, if you will. So people may believe you that, you didn't cause that foul, but they're going to look at you maybe subconsciously at least as maybe being a whiner or kind of weak if that's something you continuously do, if you continuously complain. So that's one solution or one option a result of complaining. The other would be people don't believe you, so then they think that you're lying, number one, and then number two, you're also a whiner. So there's really no positive result out of blaming, shaming, and complaining, although we have a tendency to do it. It's part of our social network, actually. I mean, if you don't believe that, just turn on the television and watch the news, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
So we need to Alex's point, I think if we can manage our thoughts, both personally and athletically, and try and make, you know, not take a Pollyanna type of approach and, you know, kumbaya, head in the, or buried in the sand or up in the clouds, but, you know, we have to be real, but we can also manage those thoughts, you know, in a productive way.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Greg. Great information. And that's congratulations on working with the soccer team in Colorado.
Yeah, I'm really excited to.
Yeah.
Amy,
are you there?
Going.
Yes, I am. I
yeah,
was going to contribute
that or anything that comes to mind with you with your like tennis or other sports too. How that draws a parallel.
Yeah, I was just going to chime in and tell you what happened to me last week, what I did. I had two workshops last Friday. I had a workshop at Haverford College for the varsity women's lacrosse team. And then on Saturday, I had a workshop at the Philadelphia Acting Studio with about 13 people that participate in acting classes. And so I got this idea from some articles that I had researched about are you a confident performer, because I was doing, you know, performing artists and athletes. And one of the articles was based around Dr. Carol Dweck, the Mindset 1 and Mindset 2. And it was a great article because she had it sectioned off with about 8 different descriptions of Mindset 1. And then what I did in both workshops, and I thought it worked really well, is I read, you know, you are focused on outcomes. You're focused on your effort, you know, the two different opposing mindsets. And I went through it and I told everybody to think about which one of these things, you know, they were relating to the most. And then we talked about what mindset they were. And then I explained the fixed mindset and the growth mindset and how people do much better with the growth mindset. So they were, I thought that was a really interesting exercise, and it relates so well to their performance and how they can improve their performance by shifting their mindset. So, you know, that really worked well for athletes as well as people that are getting up and doing auditions and things like that. So,
sorry, Amy, you say focus on outcome versus focus on what else?
On the effort.
Effort.
Yeah, some people, you know, the people in the fixed mindset, the mindset one, are focused so much on, am I going to win?
That's right, yeah.
Or the people with the growth mindset are focused on, okay, I'm growing, I'm learning, I'm putting forth tremendous effort.
Yeah.
It's all about my effort and my preparation.
That's right.
So process rather than outcome.
Yes, right. And it frees them up to not be so afraid to do different things because they're so afraid of failing. And so it really applies beautifully to really everything you're trying to get them to do. And so many of them are in, you know, that they're going to say, yes, I do focus on the outcomes. Yes, I do have a fear of failure and all those things that are probably holding them back.
Yeah, that's great, Amy. So that was with the Philadelphia Acting, what was it?
Studio, yeah, Philadelphia Acting Studio. And then I used it for both.
And then Haverford, what sport was that?
Haverford College, the women's lacrosse team.
Yeah, okay, great. And how did you notice the difference, or how did they use that? Those, focus.
I thought it worked. It was a similar kind of reaction with everybody, whether they were actors or whether they were athletes. And then there was something that I got from a positive psychology teaching book, and I've used this a bunch of times for my last workshop, and I just thought I would mention it because it's been working really well, and it kind of promotes positive emotion. However you get people to participate, it makes them feel good. And I do a courage exercise with them where I have everybody close their eyes and visualize a time in their life where they acted really courageously. And then I go around the room and say, would anyone like to share the story with me? And it just brings about this confidence in them. And then they start laughing and everybody, it could go for a long time, but usually you run out of time and you just do one or two stories. And that's been really cool, is making people think about times in their life. And you can relate it either to, you could say, apply it to your competitive life in sports, or apply it to anything in your life that you've done that you thought was really courageous.
Yeah. Last time you lifted up a car to save your son, right?
Yeah. I mean, anything that makes them feel that. A lot of them went back to when they were 6 and 7 years old and told me stories about what they did at that point in their life.
Yeah, that's
a great thing to do, great exercise. So, thanks for sharing that. Congratulations, Amy, on getting those your workshops. Yeah, doing that with the Philadelphia Acting Studio and Haverford. Yeah,
that's awesome. Haverford College, yeah. And there, I just wanted to mention one more thing and see if maybe if we have time to brainstorm this. I have an opportunity with someone who is the president of a mortgage brokerage, and they work with all the real estate companies here, people selling their homes. And he calls them the producers, and what they do is they deal with the realtors and try to make the sale and sell the mortgage to them. And their percentage of productivity is very high. But this person who's the president is interested in making it even higher. They're currently ranked the top. And so he talked to me about even though they're very productive, how can we take this situation and get them to make that extra sale, to really keep improving their performance as salespeople and mortgage brokers. Even though they're motivated and they're doing well, he wants to push them a little bit harder. And how can we make them even more productive? So I've got to come up with a strategy to offer him for these 25 people that work directly under him. And
okay,
it's, I keep thinking, well, it's all about performance enhancement.
Right.
I think if I might add a little bit, Amy, I've come from a sales background, worked in brokerages, run my own sales companies, and I think, firstly, somebody's got to want to perform. They've got to want to earn the extra money. They can get comfortable at certain levels, even if they're productive. So they need to be incentivized. Once they're not incentivized or they've reached what they see as their the highest possibility, they tend to stop and get comfortable. So those goalposts need to be changed somehow, some creative thinking.
That's a good idea, to add incentives.
Yeah. I don't know whether the guy's got, monthly sales competitions going, yearly competitions. I used to run a floor with 8-9 guys, so we used to do trips to go and boxing fights or Vegas for the year. There'd be each month people could win plasma TVs, laptops, whatever it was, guys type of stuff, not to be sexist, but the floor was for the guys. So we did those type of prizes each month, and it got them not only the material product at the end of it, it got their commissions up, and it got them some social, stigma. One of the things we did was the parking spot. We had we gave one of the directors parking spots to the normal guys who normally have to park a bit further away, so they got that for a month, so they could use the top parking space.
So they got
the battered
because they weren't walking as far.
yeah, exactly. Just these little things, you know. There's, I mean, there's so many ideas you can do, but that's a good place to start, I would suggest.
Yeah, I like that. Thank
you.
Especially, I value your advice since you worked in that area. You understand it well.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Gio. And I think, incentives, I was going to mention the same thing. Incentives or some sort of rewards are great to have. I think it's important to balance that also with just making, you know, everybody feel like a team. Is it a team kind of concept, or are they all kind of?
Yes.
Kind of,
yep.
Yeah. Because it can go too far sometimes. The pressure and the competition can just wipe people out. In, you know, like car sales. There was a study done and a story that I read where, you know, they talk about how the car sales, car dealers work, and how at the beginning of the month everybody starts at zero, and then they have to make, there's this tremendous pressure to make, you know, these deals, and they're working like, you know, night and day, and if they don't, you know, it's just a dog-eat-dog kind of world where everybody's, like, fighting against each other, and it's really really rough. And at the beginning of the month, it's like, why, good advice, if you're going to buy a car, always buy it at the end of the month. Because at the beginning of the month, there's not so much pressure. Everybody's kind of trying to get their quota, and there's not that much pressure, so they don't give you that many good deals. But by the end of the month, everyone's you know, has so much pressure to make their quota that they'll give you tremendous deals. A lot of times they end up losing money because they have to sell like 15 cars a month, each one of them, in order to get this big, huge incentive, or, you know, big bonus. And if they don't get that, then they get nothing. So it's just a really dog-eat-dog kind of situation, and it just burns people out and makes them really, a lot of times, get sick or quit. So if you can make the incentive maybe on a graded, not an all-or-nothing kind of basis like it is in car dealerships, but, you know, ask them to make it somehow, you know, kind of it's gradually graded upward, so they get something, you know, a small reward for doing just one sale, and they get, you know, more reward for doing two sales, or so that everyone has can have a chance to have that success experience, you know.
Okay.
And feel good about it, and make it some way that they can work together as a team, as opposed to dog eat dog. If there's a way that they can share techniques or help, that can really make a difference too. But I think the mindset kind of stuff we're talking about can really make a huge difference too. To just talk about how they're, you know, if you can, are you going to try to do a workshop for them or something?
Yeah, what he's suggesting is because they have offices in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, that we do it like every couple months, and I have them for an hour or two, and there are 25 of them, and then maybe do some conference calls in between, and to just start working them. So, my first step is to devise some type of a curriculum that I'm going to be doing with them for the first time I get together with them. But that's what he wants. He just wants, they're already good, dedicated, hardworking people that have been there for 10 years, and he just wants to just see if he can squeeze a little more out of them. You know, how do we get them to really, really perform at the very best? And I didn't know if there was some sections in your book that you think would be appropriate, or if there are other resources that you've encountered in the past when you've worked in with executives.
Yeah, I think, in the Your Performing Edge book, chapter, I think just forget which chapter, but it's in the last chapter of the third section. Talks about how to work with business, and just all of the where I interview top business executives in that chapter, and then also each of the chapters in the book go through, you know, the basic same principles as we use that can be used for business and for sports, and so you could. Of course, with for section two, the positive images, you know, have them create a scenario in their mind of making the best time that they made a really good sale and they had a really good interaction with someone, paint a picture of that, visualize that, and so they could go through that chapter and just use business examples rather than athlete examples. Although it's good when you're talking with people in the group, you could use both because business people love to have athlete examples too. And everyone watched the Olympics recently, so probably that's something that sort of unites everyone. So you could use examples from there of good examples like people that got Olympic gold medals as well as the ones that messed up and say, how is this how does this relate to business? Lindsay Jacobellis, do you remember her? All of you, that was an example of she's the snowboard cross lady, and example of celebrating too soon. And for the last three Olympics, she's been way out in front and then ended up falling and messing up. And she's the one that was famous for three Olympics ago. She was right way out in front. That's where they go on the snowboard all the way down. They're just racing against six people. And went all the way down to the bottom. She was clearly in first place, and she's just zooming down to the bottom. She's right there with the gold medal right in front of her, but then she decides to do this little dance in the air and it flips her ski up and like a little trick just to show off. And then she ends up messing up and falling and going over to the side and having to row herself back to the finish line to barely make second, get the silver medal. Just so because she thought she had it in the bag and was celebrating too soon, she went off to the side. So that was an example, something like that, of how you sort of get to almost think you're at the finish line and then you sort of relax and then somebody else passes you. And those are absolutely examples that can be related to business too, where we and your mortgage person the director might think that people are they're thinking, oh yeah, we're number one, so we can slack off now, kind of thing, right? So so you could go through each of the chapters in the book, the positive images there, and have them create different images in their mind of what a good interaction would look like and what they would say and imagine, talking with someone else and that they're smiling. And, the magnet technique is really good, just like when you're, in running, you're putting a magnet on the person in front of you so you can feel like they're pulling you toward them. You know, with an interaction with someone, you could have them put the magnet on someone across from you so you can feel like you're really in sync with them and that everything you're saying is getting through and that they're listening, and have them imagine them smiling and nodding and shaking your hand, as opposed to most people are visualizing, the people with their guarded with their arms crossed and not happy or not listening. If you can create a better picture in their mind of the kinds of interactions they want to have and the confidence that they project, and trust, if they trust in themselves and feel really good, like you say, courageous, then that will come through to other people, that kind of energy. So, have them imagine a time when they had a really good performance, and then have them, another thing would be to have them imagine somebody that's a really tough client and, that kind of has a lot of objections and a lot of questions, and see yourself kind of mentally holding their hand and saying, okay, we can get through this. Here's how we can handle those issues, and this is okay. And see them putting up lots of roadblocks, but that you kind of get through each roadblock and say, gently, show them that you're so confident that you can handle and help them handle any situation. Does that kind of make sense?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Things like that. And then, of course, the next chapter there is on the power words and showing them how they can say, ask them what they're saying to themselves. They might be saying, oh, man, I'm tired, I can't do this. Or they're not going to want to say yes, they're going to want to say no. But if you can have them turn that around to saying a really good, positive things, that would be great. Yeah. So, yeah, thanks for sharing that, Amy. And, congratulations. You've got so much good stuff going on, the acting studio and the women's lacrosse and mortgage brokerage. I mean, they've usually got lots of money, so they can, that's a good thing. They've got a budget. Hopefully they can pay you, pay you well for it.
Yeah, I think they do have money to do this kind of thing. And they've never done it before. He's only been there for 3 years, and he's really interested in offering, things that are going to make them more productive. So, it'll be an opportunity that will go somewhere.
Yeah, that's good. So, and then if there's a way that they can have like a little, like Gio, you were saying, an award ceremony or something, or
you can do, like, I think going back to your point on teamwork, you're absolutely right. You want people to work in synergy, but as well you want healthy competition. So there can be individual prizes for a certain performance that can be scaled down from certain levels, and you can do collective incentives where as a team, if they reach certain sales numbers, then they all get something, which is great. Or even getting a little more in-depth of that, I used to put pockets to teams, so 3-4 guys would be a team, and they'd, have against another 3-4 guys in the office, and you'd create that sort of healthy competition within the office, as well as a team feeling. So it would be good, there's so much you can do, but I think it would be important to understand as well a bit about their numbers, sales numbers, and see, what's going on, how many people they're speaking to, where they're getting a sale, where they're not getting a sale. From there, you might be able to come up with some ideas of how to help them and get into some good mental exercises to come over those objections, like Doctor was saying. These are things that when you get into the nuts and bolts of sales, that's where you're going to find a lot of ways to boost performance. If you couple that with good mental technique and positive thought and visualization, I think you can get some good success with that company.
And you could.
What about team building? Did you ever do that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we did. You did your basic stuff from, going out together on paintballing, go-karting, those type of things. We did those exercises. I think they're pretty cliche now, where you let go of each, somebody falls backwards, and, we did those type of things, but I think that was a bit more of a laugh, really, just to get everybody relaxed around each other. And, I don't really know whether they're too effective, but.
Yeah, I think, if you can do any kind of games like that that help people to feel good about themselves, do something other than just talking about work, just some kind of fun game, then that can help with the team. And I was going to say, if you do an award, kind of like have them do an award ceremony of some sort, think about it like at a high school, remember the high school yearbook, where they've got like best, most successful, and all these different personalities are most likely to succeed, most improved. You could, reward people for different things, because you're always going to have the star or a couple stars that do these great sales. But then there's other people that are rising stars, so you could have an award for the most improved, sales from 1 month to the next, and for the rising star kind of thing. Most you have some, award for the person most likely to improve next month. you know, that kind of thing, so that every, you know, you can try to give out more awards than just, you know, the most sales per month kind of thing.
Yeah,
well, I think
a good
way to make it easier on yourself, Amy, is have them, you know, bring up the suggestion maybe to the director when you're talking to them and collaborating, and get those guys to give the ideas of what they want in terms of prizes and things like that, which is always a good idea. Spins it back, and then, you know, it's the same as you asking a customer what they want, and you repackaging it and give it to them. Same with these sales guys. They'll tell you what they want. Then the management can structure what they have to do to get it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, have them be part of the process kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Amy, may I go back to what you were saying before when you were talking about these workshops that you put together?
Sure.
You were emphasizing on focus on effort. Did you provide any particular strategy?
To get them in that mindset, to get them to focus?
Yeah.
I talked about focus and getting them into the now and working with, you know, baby steps and doing things, you know, in small little steps, and, you know, mistakes are okay, and sort of leaving the past and trying to get them more into just the moment where they can really think about their performance now and not be evaluating what happened before and, you know, whether they're going to win or whether they're going to get the audition.
So I did a
focus control scale with them. I gave them a worksheet on how their focus was and are they focusing on the right thing? Because if they're focusing on being in the now, then they can work on their effort and they're not going to be so consumed with what they did before, if they made a mistake, or are they going to win?
Oh, so you gave them a focus worksheet.
Yeah.
You did? Oh,
yep.
Interesting.
From Pursuit of Excellence, Terry Orlick, he's got, that book is really great, and he has these scales. He's got a commitment scale, and he's got a focus control scale, and I did that with the teams. I didn't do that with the actors. I did it with the teams.
Yeah.
And I wrote a quote from him all about focus, and then I turned it around and said to them, what do you think you're focusing on? Where are the areas where you are? Is it helping you? Is it hurting you? And it's really all about redirecting your focus back to the things that are going to serve you well. If you're focusing on whether you made a mistake or whether you didn't do something correctly, then you're not serving yourself well. So I think it, the thing that I gave them that would help with that was really directing things to what they're focusing on.
What was the name of the author?
Terry Orlick.
Okay. Yes, O-R-L-I-C-K,
okay.
Right?
Yeah, and it's called The Pursuit of Excellence.
Right.
It's a really great book.
Yeah, it's a great book. I've got it on my...
You have it? Yeah, and he's got... If you look in there, there are two pages that are next to each other, and it's all about focus control scale and then commitment scale. And that's another thing that I've done with people is... You know, are you committed? Are you ready to make these commitments? What is it going to take to get you committed to do this?
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's a really useful... I've really been trying to create new things for myself, and so I'm going to all my resources. I have so many books.
Yeah.
And pulling out different things.
Yeah.
And, you know, putting together my workshops just by pulling different things from people.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
So that's where you got the this questionnaire, I guess.
It's in the book, right?
And then I got some really good articles from this woman named Diane Allen, who does a lot of work with performers.
Yeah.
And that's
Diane
where
Allen?
I got the articles.
Giovanni.
A-L-L-E-N, Dr. Diane Allen, and she actually got certified by someone that I know who's a sports psychologist, and now she's turned it into a program dealing with performing artists.
Okay.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Diane
okay, well, that's fantastic, Amy. And, yeah, I'm so glad we could chat about that. Gio, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back. So I don't know what happened. Seems to want to kick me off tonight.
Okay, I know that you had a second case there. Do you want to just go to that one?
Yeah, I had three, didn't I? I don't know whether two were MMA and one was golf. So I don't know whether you want me to go and do the golf one maybe and change the topic a touch or...
Yeah, do you want to do the golf one?
Yeah, why not? Basically, it's a young lad, he's just turned professional. He is getting ready for his first professional event. So, again, slightly different in terms of the fighting, you know, because you're not going to come face-to-face with an opponent who's throwing a blow at you. So, you know, not to say there's not fear and apprehension, which I think he's expressed to me already, that he's kind of a little unknown and unsure of how he's going to feel when he does finally get to the tee and start competing. So, I suppose just some exercises and understanding again. But I think you kind of covered it, you know, in terms of the last guy, pretty simple, you know, goes across all the different sports. I think I want to ask him and find out what he's feeling, how he's feeling physically, you know, what would be the worst thing that happened if he hit his first tee shot out of bounds, you know, these type of questions to start to really get to understanding what he's experiencing.
Yeah. I think exercises you can do are just, you know, breathing is really good because with golf, of course, it's a very mental sport, and there's so much time. I think we spend something like 4 hours out on the golf course, and only a couple minutes of that is spent actual hitting the ball. So you've got so much time in between to think about your mistakes and all the things that you did wrong. And so if you can just breathe, you know, have him breathe, you know, breathe in. I like to, with each breath in, say I'm breathing in something that you do need, and then breathe out the things you want to let go of. So breathe in confidence, breathe out stress, that kind of thing. Breathe in relaxation, and then breathe out and let go. So that your breath, as you breathe in, you can actually say to yourself, I'm breathing in strength. So it gives your mind something to do positive rather than thinking about the mistakes and worrying about what's coming up. And then a good technique that some golfers use is, you know, looking before they shoot, just kind of looking off into the distance. You know, usually golf courses are in beautiful places where there's nice trees or something. If you can look into the distance for a moment to just kind of clear your mind, that can, I think, help, you know, just clear and just imagine clearing out all the garbage or clearing out all the unwanted thoughts, and then do his pre-shot routine, whatever he does. Ask him if he has a pre-shot routine of what, I'm sure if he's just turning professional, he probably does, of particular things that he does right before he does his shot, then, you know, have him do that. And you can say, you know, have him say to himself, yeah, I trust in my training. My body knows just what to do. I perform well under any conditions. And one of the things that golfers do too much of is, I think, you know, thinking too much about the mechanics and exactly where they're going to, how they're holding their club and how they're swinging and all that, you know, is important to learn those skills while you're doing your lessons and while you're practicing. But then when you're in the actual golf game and in the tournament, I think oftentimes it's best if you can just look at the target and see where the ball going where you want it to go, and just really, you know, have a laser focus on that, on the whole picture, the feeling you want to have and where you want the ball to go, and then let your hands, let your body take care of the mechanics. Trust that your body knows what to do to make that happen. And if it's got a coach or something, then afterwards you can sort of analyze the mechanics and all. But if you can just let your focus be on the target and seeing where you want the ball to go, then it can free your mind to just perform. And so you don't get hung up on, you know, thinking of five different things at once. which golfers tend to do, is thinking too much about, I've got to make this change and make this change, make this change. And if you're already doing that and then already in a pressure situation, then it is often too much for the mind, and then things go, you know, that's hitting it into the water hole, right? So that's one thing. And then you asked, what can we do to manage his expectations, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, commit learning, and the learning, committing to the learning opportunity. And so, you know, so you can feel good whether he plays really great or whether he plays really awful. Because golfing is like that, if you can kind of normalize that for the person to say that it's, you know, it's not just a one, it's not just a straight up, you know, linear line upward, forward. It's golf is often up and down. And
oh, yeah, absolutely.
One day you're, I mean, you look at Tiger Woods or any of the top guys, Phil Mickelson, they're all, you know, great one time, and then they hit a shot, hit a terrible shot the next. But you look, it can make you more determined to get the next shot if you can, you know, have them use that anger rather than saying, oh, God, this is how the game's going. Oh, geez, this is a sign that it's going to be an awful game. Rather than saying that, just say to yourself, okay, that was one bad shot, no big deal. I'll turn it around here. And next shot gives me a chance to improve on the next shot. You know, sometimes it's even laughable how how it is that, you know, we can be so good and then hit such a poor shot, because there's just so many things that go into making a great shot. And the weather and the green and your clubs and your style and all of that. So if there's a way that I know that people get so serious about it, you know, that every shot has to be perfect, that they get to be perfectionists, it can be really frustrating. And so if there's a way you can help them focus on the fun factor, the enjoyment of the game, and smile, you know, just try to even smile before, you know, in between while he's walking to the next shot, laugh, find something to laugh about, that would be great.
I think, you know, from experience playing, if I can get him to visualize and remember, I think anybody who plays golf and played it a lot, you know, there were times that we'd play in practice, maybe six or seven of us till the sun went down, you know, and we'd do chipping competitions, putting competitions, you know, we'd go and play, and it would be so much fun. It would just be absolute sheer fun, you know. There was no thought of technique involved in it. And everybody's been through that. And then as they get better and they advance to these more serious competitions, you can see, I've seen it with my own friends who've got on tour and not made it, you know, I've seen them mentally change and not have fun with the game. It's just they've lost that youthful innocence. And I think that's something, if I can figure a visualization technique for them to get back to that place, I think there's a lot to be said about that.
Oh, for sure, yeah. So if you can have them, that's an exercise you could do, have them imagine that they're young again, playing golf or playing some other sport. Most golfers probably started when they were very young, so if you can imagine them, have them imagine going back to that time when they first started golf and how much fun it was and what attracted them to the sport. That's a great exercise.
Now, would you do that with them, their eyes closed, so they can get into the visualization better, or their choice?
Would you say that again?
Would you ask, when you're taking them through these exercises and you're asking them to visualize these times and past experiences, would you ask them to have their eyes closed, or would you ask them to their own personal preference?
Yeah, most of the time I say close your eyes if you're comfortable with that, or if they're not, if they're not, then they can just stare. If you're in a room with them, have them stare off to one corner of the room or something. And or if you're on the phone with you, then closing eyes is usually good because it gets them away from distractions. If you're on the phone with someone, there's so many other things that they could be. They're looking at their email, their Facebook page, or something else while you're working with them, and you don't know that because you're on the phone. So if you ask them to close their eyes, that can help to get rid of those distractions. The only time that And then if you're in the room with them in the office, it's better to have them close their eyes just so they're not looking, so they don't feel like they have to look at you. So it kind of takes the pressure off the eye contact. They can really get into their own experience kind of thing. The only time that they wouldn't, I would say, not close a person's eyes is if a person's had a trauma in the past. Sometimes I've worked in hospitals where women have been sexually abused, that kind of thing, and they have trouble even closing their eyes because they go right back into that traumatic experience of some sort, or someone's been in an accident or something where they're really agitated, then they have trouble, they just don't feel comfortable closing their eyes, so you can just have them keep them open. But either way, have them visualize that time, go back to when they were a child again, kind of thing, and youthful innocence, as you say, you know?
Cool.
Yeah, and then I'd say with each hole, they're going to ask, we're usually asking what we call negative questions, questions that start with why. Why does this always happen to me? You know, why is this so difficult? Why can't I get it in the hole? Why is this such a bad, why am I such a bad player? Those questions, when you ask questions that start with why, then the left brain gets kicked into gear, which is that logical, analytical, critical side that gives you all those answers. It says, oh, yeah, because you're an idiot, because you don't, because you're a terrible golfer, because you don't follow through. It kind of beats you up inside. But if you ask what I call positive action questions, ask them to say things like then that will lead you to taking some positive action. Like ask questions like, what's good about this situation? There's always something good, even if you hit it in the wrong place. You can say, what's good about this? Well, it gives me a chance to get it, practice getting it out of the sand trap. Kind of thing. Ask them what's good about this situation, and then ask how can I use this to my advantage. So whatever's going on, even if you're behind, you can say, okay, well then now I get to practice coming from behind to winning or to improving. How can I use this to my advantage? What can I learn from this? And what's the next step? Oh, the learning is great. Try to come up with three things that they learned from that situation. My club differently. I should, I was distracted. I should be in the moment, like Amy was saying. And then ask yourself, what's the next step? Okay, so what do I need to do on the next shot? And ask yourself, ask them, how can I keep moving forward? Keep moving forward. So if you ask those kind of questions, let's start with what or how. Then that leads you to, to positive action, moving forward, and not to over-analyzing. Later on, you can analyze what happened in the game, but during the game itself, just if you ask questions to start with what or how, what's good about this? How can I use this to my advantage? What can I learn from this? What's the next step? How can I keep moving forward? Then that keeps you in this really positive mode. I think so that no matter what's happening in the game, you can get better. Is that helpful?
Yeah, really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, Greg or Amy, are you there? Or Alex, do you have any other suggestions for the golfer for Gio?
No, I think you're right on. I think the when playing with golfers is the important thing is to maintain the mind in the target and trying to push aside all the negative thoughts or intrusive thoughts that are interfering with just staying in the moment. Sometimes what I ask them to do is I teach them to breathe from the belly rather than from the chest.
Yeah.
That tends to, actually, that's a physiological response and leads to a more calming state. So the way I have them practice is I have them lying down on the floor or on the couch or whatever and just put something that has some weight, minimum weight, on the belly. I have them experience the belly going up and down with each breath. So once they begin to know how to breathe using the diaphragm or the belly from there, then actually the body gets into a more calming state. If you want to go even deeper than that, you can really help them to know how the calmness state and the breathing is spread out through the entire body, because the body has not one diaphragm but five. So once they begin to know how all five diaphragms, one is on top of the head, the second one is on the neck, the third one is just by underneath the cage, the ribs, the fourth one on the pelvis, and the fifth one the knees. So all these five diaphragms move in synchronicity at the same time if you're just staying in the moment. So the more they can practice the belly breathing, the better they'll be able to be more aware and mindful of how the calming state is spread out through the entire body, not just in the belly or my chest only, but in the entire body as well. So I have them practice that. Has been quite useful. So.
Yeah, that's great.
Right, yeah, excellent.
Yeah. Thanks. Just listening to your voice, I get more calm here. that's fantastic. Yeah, any other comments? Greg, are you still there?
I am still here, yeah. Okay. No, it's a great conversation. I mean, I think we're...
do you work with golfers too?
I haven't worked with the golfer, no. Just my own game. I could probably use some outside help.
Yeah, we all can.
So maybe I'll fly over to London and have Gio give me a lesson here.
Well, we've got the web for it.
Well, maybe you'll have to fly over here then, because it's pretty dry here.
Absolutely. I'm over there in June, actually, Greg. I shall hit you up.
Okay, yeah. No, because you're close in Pasadena there. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Gio, I'll be in London at the end of March.
Well, please, look me up and we'll meet for coffee. I'll come into London. I'm sort of 30 minutes on the train north of London.
Oh, really? I'm going to be
staying
at the Apex Temple Inn of Court, which is right near the Inn of Courts.
Well, for sure, you must get my email address. I think I'm a friend on the Facebook page, so if you befriend me, we'll arrange something for sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
You can get that through the PECI private group, our Facebook page there. Just you can email through there. Yeah. So,
Gio, what is your last name?
Oliva.
What is it?
Oliva.
Oliva.
O-L-I-V-A. Yeah, like olive. It means olive in English.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
John Olive, would you translate it?
Gio Olive, okay.
Yeah, Giovanni Oliva is how you pronounce it.
All right. And Giovanni with double N.
Yeah, double N, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, okay. Well, you had a third case. Do you want to just go over that quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. The third guy is quite an interesting case and probably the one that I'm most intrigued to help. He's a semi-professional MMA fighter. He actually owns the gym.
So he's
that I do some
gym,
of the...
Right?
Yeah, mixed martial arts. He owns the gym that I do the boxing training at and the other fighter is fighting at. So they're all friends. And his situation is that he's lost every single fight that he's had so far as a semi-pro fighter. Now,
embarrassing for him, right?
Absolutely, yeah. He found it really embarrassing. I mean, he's been in tears, and I can attest, I've sparred with the guy, I've trained him, and he's got the ability, he's definitely got the athletic ability, the technical ability to beat these guys that he's lost against. It's the clearest case you'll ever see of a mental breakdown in sport. Not to knock his misfortune, because it is, it's that simple. He froze, he wouldn't even... wouldn't even engage in a fight with the guy until the guy was on top of him, and by then it was too late. So, like I say, I'm really compelled. I feel really compelled to want to help him overcome getting back in the ring, because he's stopped fighting now, and helping him get over that hurdle, and then performing secondly, and actually reaching his potential. Which in turn can help his business. It helps him promote his business, it gives him more confidence and it shows everybody else, that you can fail, you can get knocked down and get back up again. So it's a really interesting case. And any, you know, thoughts from you guys would be really helpful.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things he could do is, since he's the owner of the gym there, you think, you know, he's got this probably idea that he needs to be a role model for others, right, or be able to do the sport.
yeah, exactly. And, you know, credibility, isn't it? You know, look,
yeah,
to start, let's be honest, the general person that's coming in the gym, the fact that he's even fought, that's enough credibility in my eyes. You know, I know what it takes, and anybody that can even go into a fight, that's overcoming something in itself. So, you know, that's one thing. But, of course, in that circle of the professionals, and the gym becomes kind of an entity. So it becomes like a fight club. So that in itself is important for him to show that his brand and the good fighters come out of his gym. So, yeah, there is credibility issues there among the other promoters. You know, these promoters look for gyms and look for the high-quality fighters. So it's a big thing.
Yeah, so I think, you know, obviously he wants to... sort of it's like a matter of saving face type of thing with his fighting, but it's become a real anxiety-provoking kind of situation. So if you can talk to him about that, it would be great. And, you know, since he's the owner, I would think he probably has more control than he thinks. With being owner of the gym, he could, you know, I would think he could arrange his own schedule, and you know, if there's a way that he could try to arrange a success experience for him, you know, get maybe which you know, if he could think in baby steps, and you want to try to fight someone that's the easiest possible person to fight or to work with first. And do it at a time when everybody isn't watching. You know, if he owns the gym, you could think he could, you know, come in early in the morning or fight late at night when, you know, and practice other times when people aren't there, when he doesn't have all that pressure. If there's a way that he could, you know, work with you as his coach, or and then maybe if you could arrange for him to, you know, fight someone that's, you know, just learning so that he could have a chance to, you know, be able to fight someone at his...
Build his confidence more so, yeah.
Yeah, so he could build his confidence, have a success experience, try to find somebody that's his own level or easier than him, and say, okay, let's do it in the morning, 5 in the morning before everybody gets here, or at nighttime. So he can feel like he can just, you know, really work on his technique and not worry about other people judging him. So that's one, and, you know, just do it privately there so that other people aren't watching. So he could, yeah, get his confidence and then, you know, do more of that, get feedback. And if since you can coach him on his fighting as well as the mental part, is that right?
Yeah, the boxing, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so you could, you know, help him with that and, you know, both his mentally rehearsing his fighting, and he's probably got a lot of negative imagery in his mind right now of the bad fights that he's had, or, you know, losing all those fights. So if you can try to build up a resume or, you know, some imagery of good fights, even if it's, you know, someone that's really easy, maybe just a short fight, too, not something that goes on and on. Maybe it could be just for a minute or two.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely a longer-term thing. In terms of getting results, this is definitely a longer-term plan, isn't it?
Yeah.
You want to set out with a guy like this.
Since he owns the gym, he's got time, probably, and hopefully in... But you could probably try, if he fought somebody that's really easy, he could get, you know, results quickly and see results and build his confidence.
Yeah, the difficult thing with it, actual fight, you know, a real-life fight scenario is, first of all, you're in the hands of the promoters. So you kind of, it's very difficult for you to pick and choose who you can fight in a live fight circumstance. So, but going back to... baby steps and creating, I can control the sparring, who he spars, who he, you know, and if he spars in front of people, for sure, I can control that aspect. So you can build his confidence back up. It would be difficult to get him a fight behind closed doors, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I could, but it wouldn't be legal. Put it that way.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, maybe it's something that he'd rather do to overcome that. You know, that might be an option, but we'll see. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that. I think that's really important because I've sparred with him and, you know, seen him lose his confidence. And you're absolutely right. I remember when I'd had some hard sparring sessions, and this is probably something I should talk to him about and giving my experiences. And, you know, I've gone in there and I've got beaten all over the boxing ring because I've been in there against a good guy and who's had a lot better skill level than me. And you learn, and from that you learn, and your confidence gets knocked, and a good coach will put you back in with somebody easier and build that confidence back up. And so I've had it done with myself. So, yeah, I can see how that will work strongly.
Yeah, so if you can share your experience of the times you've been, you know, where you had defeat and didn't do as well, that can normalize that experience for him and feel it. So he feels like he's not the only one out there that's messing up. And then do yeah, some visualization. Well, do I like this the technique of taking a piece of paper and writing a vertical line down the center, and then on the left-hand side, have him write his negative thoughts and self-doubts, like whatever comes up, like I'm no good at this, I'm not fighting well, I'm going to get beat. All of those kind of things come up, and then with each negative thought, go over to the right-hand side and write. At the top right, positive or power words or positive reframing, and then have him write one or at least two or three positive power words, positive self-statements for every one of the negative thoughts. So instead of saying, I hate this, I hate fighting, this is embarrassing, which is he's probably saying, he could say, you know, I'm learning how to fight confidently, or, you know, I'm becoming a better fighter every day, that kind of thing. And so that each time he says one of those negative thoughts, then have him say the positive thoughts, you know, go to the right-hand side of the page and say those positive thoughts. You know, each one say two times to himself. It's actually even more helpful to say them out loud if he can just do that on a, you know, privately in his own room or something, just say them out loud two times, and then what you can, that helps to reinforce it in the mind, and what you could do then is take all that list of positive thoughts of, you know, I'm learning to be a better fighter, I can do this, this is building my confidence, all those kind of things, create a MP3, a visualization audio, with all those positive, only the positive thoughts, not the, don't include the negative ones there because you don't want to reinforce those, but just the positive ones. And say each one two times, and you could go through the whole list of what he's written down and add some of your own if you want to add some too. And then go back over the list again and read them, you know, say again, read them two times so you really reinforce those in his mind. And have him play that before he goes to bed at night, and what you're, you know, thinking about before you go to sleep tends to be what you dream about. So tell him he's getting, if he plays that audio, and you could do it even on an iPhone, you know, has a recorder on it, any kind of device, or use Audacity, which is this is a free program you can download for your computer. Either way, or any recording system. Then you, if he plays that right before he goes to sleep at night, then he's getting 8 hours more of training, basically. His subconscious mind can be really filling it with good positive thoughts for that whole time. And then also play it right before his fights, and he can go in there feeling a lot more confident. And, you know, just tell him that it can make a huge difference. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then I've
And do you have some sort of, I mean, carry on, sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, are we going to get to listen to some
some MP3s you've put together so that we can see how they're structured and how the sort of flow of it all goes? Or
yeah, there's some in that module. I'll put one in there right now, right after this, for I'll put it right there after our recording. And also I'll just adding a section of visualization sample ones, so you can hear, you know, how I do it with athletes too. So yeah, and I can just email that to all of you too. So yeah, I'll do that. And then this time, and then the pressure, I have what I call pressure balloon technique, where you just imagine whatever it is that your negative thoughts, your all that anxiety and fear, whatever it is that you want to get rid of, just imagine a balloon, a little helium balloon that you, or you put all that negative stuff in the balloon, and then just imagine it, you know, how you just let a balloon go, just let it float up into the air, or you can just, you know, kind of let it, let the air out of it, and just so it kind of just floats away. But the idea is that it just, you know, all those unwanted thoughts are in this balloon, and you just let it go. And so that's a kind of a nice way to feel like all the pressure and all the anxiety and fear can just go into this balloon, and then just let it float away. And so that's something visual that, you know, he could do with his unwanted thoughts too. So yeah, so those are some techniques there. Yeah, hope that's helpful. And I know we're getting, yes, it's over an hour and a half here. I need to, we're just about out of time. Does anyone have anything else to add, or anything that you want to, if you want to, would like to say what the most important thing you got out of today's session, any gems that you got that were helpful? Anyone?
Just stay in the moment.
Okay. Alex, staying in the moment.
Yeah. Well, I thought your point about asking how and what opposed to why was real important, because it does keep you in that negative state when you ask why. But I think there is one time you want to ask it, and that might be when you're searching out why somebody wants to participate in their sport. You know, if they do need to answer that question at some point in time.
Yeah.
Back to Gio's point about, you know, you want to find that happiness, that joy, that childlike experience, and that answers that question as to why are you doing this? Why do you go through all of this difficult training to participate in this sport? So there's some values, and there's some specific feelings that we all are driven to achieve, and it's not about the winning so much. I mean, we all want to win. Everyone wants to win. If that's what it were all about, everyone would be winning. And then we all go about it a little bit differently. Our effort is a little bit different. But that purpose, that higher purpose, we do need to ask ourselves that question one time, and that is, why am I doing this? So, but I think it's important. Your point is very important, too. You don't want to ask it, you know, when they're in that negative state as far as, why did you do that? You know, you could end up turning a postage stamp into a novel by asking that question. So anyway,
yeah,
that's the part I enjoyed. Yeah,
that's
you.
A good point, Greg. Yeah, yeah, for sure. You want to get back to that, and that asking what or why did I start doing my sport? It can get you back to that childlike experience.
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah, Amy, are you still there? But she might. I say she might have had to go to an appointment, so that's good. But yeah, that's great. She could share about the mortgage brokers and all of the and the ballet and acting stuff that she's doing, Haverford School. So great, yeah. And Gio, is that helpful for you or anything?
Oh, extremely helpful. Yeah, there's quite a lot of gems in there for me. You know, the process and not outcomes. Sort of reconfirmed some stuff that we've been working a lot on in my golf certification is sticking to these processes. So it's good to hear other people from other walks of life reconfirm that. And again, you know, that bit about, well, I might have said it myself, but you guys actually bringing it up, about really remembering that it's supposed to be fun, when you're talking about sport, that is.
you know, it should be the essence of it. And I think a lot of us forget that, don't we, as adults?
Yeah, exactly. And that it's a choice. You know, nobody's like with golf or whatever, or MMA. It's a choice that we're doing this. No one's putting a gun to our head.
No, exactly. But I think mostly what I've got from today is a bit more of a structure. Sort of, you know, you sit down with a conversation, you really fact find, and it's no different to you know, sitting down and interviewing somebody or trying to get a new prospective client in business. You're fact finding, you're asking the right sort of questions, and then from that you're deriving solutions and things to work on to help. So, you know, that's good to see the context of it.
Yeah, that's great. A structure of finding things that are what's working, what's not working.
Yeah, well, you know what my fear, not my fear, but my kind of worry is we go through 8 weeks of learning all this stuff, and then, you know, I've never ever been through a sports psychology session. So firstly, I want to have one myself so that I can experience how you'd conduct it. And in an ideal world, we'd all be able to follow you around for a couple of weeks, wouldn't we? But we don't have that luxury. So that's what I'm really eager to learn and see. And I'm that type of guy that I'll learn from experience and see how somebody does it. Say, okay, I like that. I'll use that. That suits my style. That bit doesn't. And then build my own style around it. But when you're learning in this type of environment, we obviously don't have that luxury, do we?
Well, we could actually do that since you're requesting that. You know, that's a good idea. You know, maybe for our next session in March, which is the next one would be March 13th. Yeah, we could. Do a little bit of that with each person that's on the call. Just kind of imagine that you do a role play and imagine that you're a client and that you have for whatever sport you're doing or business. Ask some questions. I could be your sports psychologist for the moment, and that.
Yeah, that would be really valuable.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
That
is
on the phone.
Let's do that for next time. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And
thanks, guys.
Okay, bye, Gio.
Nice to speak to you all. Take care.
Bye, Greg. Bye, Amy.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Have a great week.
Have a great week.
Take care, Greg. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye.